Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Thursday, September 26th, 2019. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adioye, and joining me we have IGN's Per Schneider.
Hey.
Per.
Woo!
How's it going? How you doing?
Good. Tired.
Yeah?
Yeah, I just got back from Japan.
Oh, really?
Delivering my daughter to college.
Wow.
She went to college for 4 years there.
Yeah. In Japan?
Isn't that crazy?
That's awesome.
So I'm dealing with all the, you know, kind of like dad worry stuff, being, I don't know how many thousand miles away, but...
Wow.
And all that jet lag on top of it. So if I fall asleep during the show, it's not your fault.
Awesome, awesome. Well, Per, since Greg is a heartless bastard, he kind of threw me into the deep end. And so since I got here, I've been like compiling the doc, and you've been here for like 30 minutes. I haven't actually gotten to talk to you yet. Do you know at all like what's going on here? What, why Greg brought you out here to?
No, explain it to me.
And so essentially, Kinda Funny is doing this up and comer thing where they brought somebody from their community, who is me, to come here and host for a week. And you know, Greg floated the idea of, hey, like you can essentially host with whoever you want. Bring out somebody who you want to host with, whether it's because you admire the work or whether or whatever reason it may be. You were one of my picks, one of my two picks.
Aww.
For co-hosts.
Thank you.
And yeah, I picked you because I've been a fan of IGN forever. I really admire the site and what you've kind of built it up to be. I've been following Greg since, you know, he was on Beyond. And so, yeah, I'm a big fan of what you do there. And so I really wanted to get to host with you.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for having me. That's very nice.
Of course.
I thought I came here to drink all the LaCroix. There's only
there's a lot of LaCroix.
900,000 cans left, I noticed.
Yeah.
You guys are really making a dent there. Yeah.
We're halfway through.
I love seeing all the discontinued flavors from like 1998 and stuff.
So, Per, for the most part, people will probably know you. People will probably know IGN. But for those who might not be fully in the know, Per, what is your role at IGN?
What am I? I'm the chief content officer, and I oversee all content production, so editorial, video, as well as product, which I took on 2 weeks ago, and we're building some cool stuff for the website. You know, we've got some ideas on how to combine content creation and tools into something unique.
Mm.
So that's what I'm working on right
now. Awesome.
Yeah.
Exciting. What's your favorite part about working at IGN?
My favorite part? Well, it's you're making your hobby your job, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like this. I've loved video games, you know, ever since I was a wee lad playing my Fairchild Channel F.
Oh, wow.
Yes, that was one of the old consoles with removable cartridges. And then, you know, since then, I've always been about video games. And then, obviously, all the pop culture stuff that's popped up over the years and become mainstream, like, you know, your comic book franchises and Star Wars and all that stuff that is back and bigger now. So IGN is like the perfect combo. I get to watch stuff early, play stuff early, and just a trick to play games early. That's it.
I mean, video games are awesome, and that's why we're doing the show. We're going to get to talk about video games, such as The Last of Us Part 2, because today is Outbreak Day. We're also going to talk about some Oculus news and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live, right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you're wrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames or listen on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad free. Before we get into it, a few things for housekeeping. First, thank you to our Patreon producers, patreon.com/reretrogames, Black Jack, and Muhammad Muhammad. Today, we're brought to you by Upstart, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report.
Time for some news.
We have five items today.
Baker's dozen!
Yeah. First, The Last of Us Part 2, Outbreak Day. Is today, and the floodgates have opened as far as takes, news, impressions. I know later on Patreon today, Kinda Funny Games Cast is gonna be live on Patreon, and Greg will be giving some of his impressions on The Last of Us Part 2 there. But you know, since the floodgates have opened, there have been a couple of newsworthy, I guess, news items that have come up that we should discuss. Firstly, The Last of Us Part 2 won't have multiplayer after all. This story comes from U.S. gamers Katie McCarthy. It reads, it turns out that The Last of Us Part 2 actually won't have a multiplayer mode, contrary to reports last year saying otherwise. At an event earlier this week, Naughty Dog lead game designer Emilia Schatz confirmed the lack of multiplayer in an interview with US Gamer. In a follow-up after the event, Sony reconfirmed the news. Quote, we're focusing on a single-player experience, so we're just making a single-player game for this. Schatz said during the event when asked about what sort of form the previously confirmed multiplayer mode would take. Quote, correct, it is a single-player game, end quote, a Sony representative subsequently clarified over email. Previously, at E3 2018, co-directors Kurt Margnow and Anthony Newman confirmed to outlets such as Polygon and GameSpot that The Last of Us's multiplayer would be making a comeback. And so we got a question in from the five-star man and says, hello, Blessing, and welcome, Pear. It was confirmed today that The Last of Us 2 would not have multiplayer. What do you think sparked this change, especially since the first game's multiplayer was so well-received? Do you think it is possible for a multiplayer mode to be eventually added in the future? All the best, the five-star man. Pear, are you familiar with The Last of Us's multiplayer mode?
Yeah, I didn't play it a ton, but I'm familiar. I mean, look, I think what sparked the change is the PlayStation 4, you know, has some life left, but, you know, once the PS5 is announced and Sony's marketing machine is going to kick in, they'll focus a lot on it. And, like, The Last of Us 2 arrives a little late in the life cycle. Like, February is pretty late. This should have been a big holiday title. And I think the motivating factor here is time. Get it. Get this game out on time, and then I bet they're going to double dip. Just like last time, we'll see The Last of Us 2 on the PlayStation 5. And what better way to sell it on that platform than to have an all-new mode and, you know, add multiplayer then.
I will admit that this is somewhat of a bummer to me because I loved The Last of Us's multiplayer mode, especially the, I think it was Survival or Survivor, where it's essentially Last Man Standing 4v4. Really fun mode. I know I was having a conversation with Barrett on the way here because I don't think he had played The Last of Us's multiplayer mode, but he had played Uncharted's. And I was kind of explaining that, like, the thing that makes Last of Us's multiplayer so special is the fact that it is slow and it is all about stealth and it is all about the listening mechanic from single player is present in the multiplayer. And so, like, if you're running and somebody's in listen mode, they will see you clearly, they'll know where you are, and the multiplayer is all about getting the jump on the other person. And so, like, for The Last of Us Part 2, you know, I've been wondering, like, what multiplayer would look like in that game, because I think there's a lot of room for potential as far as where they can take it with, like, you know, maybe adding clickers and infected in the multiplayer, or maybe doing a horde mode, or maybe, I mean, I know, like, this is thinking, like, this is galaxy brain type stuff, but, like, even, like, a battle royale-esque thing, I imagine, like, 100 players is off the table, but even, like, you know, if they could get, like, a 20-player battle royale mode or something like that, right, that could be a really cool thing. There are a lot of options because Last of Us, with their systems and their mechanics in those game in that game, there's so much they can do. But I think what you say makes sense, that, like, yeah, we're at the end of the life cycle of the PS4.
I think it's a time thing, right? Yeah. Like, if I'm assuming multiplayer, even if farmed out to a completely different team, would just push the launch date even further and closer to the PS5, and I think that would be an issue. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, I always love it when talented studios take a stab at multiplayer and it turns out to be something different. Right? Like, companies that are really good at storytelling, single-player kind of gameplay elements. Like, if you think of Splinter Cell, right? Mm. We got something really special when that team created an asynchronous multiplayer mode,
right? Spies versus Mercs?
Yeah. Yes. Or, you know, or The Last of Us. Like, you I feel like a lot of multiplayer modes in games that are established now feel the same. You know, Battle Royale happened, and now every game will add a Battle Royale mode, as you know. And I always appreciate when companies like Naughty Dog come up with something different. That said, when I finished playing The Last of Us, I thought, okay, this story is done. And then when the next one got announced, I was like, how are they going to continue this? Like, what will the relationship between these two characters be? I'm not going to spoil the ending of the last one if you're still catching up, but it's like, that was such a big game changer for that game and the relationship of these characters, and how will they address that in the sequel? So I was all about single player, so yeah. If we don't get a multiplayer mode for this version, and maybe we'll get it later on PS5, I'm totally fine with it.
Yeah, and I think that does make sense that, like, you know, Last of Us Part 2 will probably be re-released on PS5.
Come on, 100%.
But Well, my question for you, actually, because thinking about it more, right? What's the chance that the PS5 will be backwards compatible? And if that's the case, is there a need to re-release The Last of Us 2?
Well, the need is they can make a ton of money by upgrading the visuals, right? And adding a new mode and then extending the life cycle of The Last of Us. Publishers are making a lot of money off users playing the games for a long time and purchasing new add-on packs and or subscriptions. So I do think that there is still a reason to do that, but I think we can expect from the next generation of platforms, they don't need to be backwards compatible because you can already stream games pretty reliable, right? And like Stadia is going to push that mentality forward. It's not going to work everywhere, and some people don't have the internet connections for it, but like backwards compatibility is going to be very easy when everything is being streamed from remote servers, right?
That's very true. Do you think, and this is a totally different question, right? Do you think that this affects reviews at all? Because Last of Us, like, I'm sure if The Last of Us came out and it didn't have multiplayer, it would probably still, you know, be very critically acclaimed and people would still love it and people would still hold it just as high. And I know, like, for most people, probably multiplayer was just this secondary thing that, you know, it's an awesome secondary thing, but it's not necessarily the main course here. Do you think that, yeah, not having a multiplayer is going to affect how people receive this game or even, like, the value that people feel like they're getting with The Last of Us Part Two?
Yeah, I think it depends on the reviewers. I mean, value is so subjective, right? Yeah. Somebody may say, you know, Untitled Goose Game is not worth $15 for 2 hours of gameplay. Others say, no, this was, you know, $15 really well spent, and they see it more like a movie-going experience or something like that. I think there will be some fans who loved multiplayer like you to the point where maybe it will feel like a less complete package. And I don't think as a reviewer you can kind of hide your feelings. But our kind of review standards and approach is to, you know, rate a game on the experience it delivers, not on necessarily the value or what the game could have been, right? Like it's kind of tough to put that, like, approach every game from the angle of saying, I want what I got last time, I don't want less, right?
Yeah.
Like, but that said, like, if you have, like, take FIFA or Madden or something, where you have, like, an annualized franchise where it feels like they want you to buy this game every year, but they're taking pieces out, or you get in a legacy edition, I do think it impacts reviews. I think with this game, I don't think so.
Yeah, and it's so interesting with The Last of Us, right? Because The Last of Us, the first one, right? Even if it was just a single player, you know, if they came out and they were like, this game is even $70 or $80, The Last of Us is just so incredible that, like, you know, I would pay that for The Last of Us Part Two. And so, like, the multiplayer being missing from this release is a bummer to me. But at the same time, you know, I'm still excited for The Last of Us Part Two. I'm still going to pay $60 for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's why it's great to have multiple reviewers out there and sources you can go to for reviews, right? Like somebody who knows you and knows that you love the multiplayer, like your opinion is relevant. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, being disappointed that a mode is excluded, or, you know, like Mario Kart when it launched without a battle mode, people were like, well, it's missing this kind of staple of the franchise. So I think that's it. That's why we have different opinions and different reviewers. Not everybody can take the same approach.
Yeah. And this kind of harkens back to the conversation I think me and Greg were having yesterday about Call of Duty. And there's a new story about how there is a special ops mode that is going to be exclusive to PS4 and how
that made people happy.
Yeah, like, and I mean, it's a similar thing because that a lot of the complaints are about value. And is my $60, you know, my $60 on Xbox isn't worth the same $60 on PlayStation, which I understand that argument. And it's just difficult because there's a lot of business wrapped into it, right? And, you know, if the Spec Ops was missing, would it still be a $60 product? I feel like probably, yeah, we probably just wouldn't know that there's no, like, it's difficult.
Yeah, in that case, I think, you know, reviewers should compare the two versions. And if one version excludes something that, like, if that mode is amazing and if you really feel its absence, then I think the two versions should get different scores. I'm surprised that they do that. Like, excluding mode seems like such a, for no reason.
Yeah. Other than, and in the Call of Duty case, it's like a year delay, which might as well, I mean, in the case of Call of Duty, might as well just exclude it. But let's get into the part two of this Last of Us news. And so in Last of Us Part Two, you'll also be killing dogs. This comes from GameSpot's Phil Hornshaw. They're very aggressive dogs, though.
No dachshunds. No dachshunds were harmed in this game.
From GameSpot, this reads, The Last of Us Part II is adding a lot of tweaks and changes to the formula established by its 2013 predecessor. But probably the most startling is the amped-up brutality you'll see on screen as Ellie shoots, stabs, chokes out, and hacks various other humans to death.
Okay, that's fine.
He was scared. He was scared it was going to be a corgi or something.
Naughty Dog's post-apocalyptic stealth series is about the horrific things you'll have to do to survive. And in addition to murdering a lot of people, you'll also be murdering a lot of dogs. We recently spent, and this is GameSpot talking, we recently spent about 2 hours playing The Last of Us Part II at a press event in Los Angeles where Naughty Dog introduced us to its smarter, more dangerous human enemies. Joel and Ellie fought and killed together truckloads of murderous human survivors in the first game, and Ellie faces more of them in the second, but this time they've got scent tracking attack dogs to use against you. The dogs add some new wrinkles to stealth gameplay. If they cross the scent trail Ellie leaves as she moves around, they can track her, which means you have to worry about being rooted out on top of staying out of sight and being quiet. Often you'll have to keep moving or use a distraction to throw a dog off. You can't just chill out behind a piece of cover to stay safe. Ellie's increased mobility and new capabilities, like crawling through tall grass so she's tougher to spot, helps a lot, as do large encounters with interior and exterior locations that give you plenty of options to keep moving and avoid being caught. I included this because I think it's such an interesting... the killing dogs thing is kind of sad, but it's an interesting gameplay wrinkle, right? Because I think for what we know as The Last of Us, right... A thing I said during the state of play, because I noticed during the trailer that they put out on Tuesday, was that we were seeing some of the same enemies, right? We're seeing the clickers, we're seeing the bloaters, we're seeing some of the regular infected, right? And I was curious on what different enemy classes would look like in Last of Us Part II, or if there would be like a lot more different types of enemy classes than there were in Last of Us Part I, because I would kind of want more from the gameplay of Last of Us Part II. And so the idea that there are dogs and they're going to change the way you play because they are finding you through your scent fascinates me. I think is a really cool idea.
Well, it's not only adding another stealth element, obviously, with with your character leaving a con trail and you having to worry about that, but it's about a moral choice too. I haven't played this game yet. As I said, I was out, but Jonathan Dornbush from IGN went hands on with it as well, and he had the same impression. He said, "Hey, the dogs actually add this kind of moral dilemma where you want to run away, even though you have the ability to kill them, and you sometimes have to maybe when you're backed into a corner. They're cute." And they're dogs, and we love dogs, and it's kind of weird that you'd be okay killing a human more so. But, like, that's that moral dilemma. It, like, hits you kind of like if you have a dog at home, you're like, I don't want to do this. And so it's a very big difference to fighting a clicker where you just – it's gross and you want to get rid of it. Now you have a dog and you're sitting in the corner and you're like, what's the best solution
it's
now?
Like,
I don't want to hurt this thing.
It's an added element to think about. And I played –
Portillo.
Oh no, not Portillo.
No.
I played Wolfenstein Youngblood when that came out, and you know the enemies in that game have attack dogs that they have like
bombs.
Yeah,
but they're attack dogs.
Yeah, they are attack dogs.
These are like pets.
But they're like I'm sure these are gonna be like aggressive like dogs that the enemies are seeking out.
Yeah, but in the apocalypse, it's not like there's a pets first shop open selling German shepherds. Like you take any dog you get, and so maybe there'll be some
some
really cute ones. Yeah.
But even in Wolfenstein Youngblood, right? Like it did add a narrative element because the dogs had bombs strapped to them, and of course you're fighting Nazis, and so like they are the embodiment of evil in this game, right? And so it made me hate the enemies more, but at the same time, like, you know, I did feel kind of sad, you know, killing these dogs because, you know, like deep down I'm like, well, they don't like, it's not like the dogs are the ones that are, you know, enacting these horrible acts of racism and doing all this. But
do you feel bad killing Skags in Borderlands?
No,
they make cuter noises when they die now. No.
The Skags are ugly. if you want more impressions and a much longer, more, in detailed conversation about Last of Us Part II, stay tuned for Gamescast coming out Monday live on Patreon today. Yes. Thanks, Kevin. There's make eye kind of contact with Kevin, make sure I had all the right information right there.
Nailed it.
Yeah, there's a lot of new stuff in this game. I think if you're into The Last of Us, you want to hear some of that stuff.
Let's get into our second story of the day. There's a whole bunch of new Oculus news. This comes from Harrison Weber over at Fast Company. The article says, quote, "On stage during its annual developer event, Oculus leaders announced a handful of updates today that seem to inch their vision for VR forward, and whether you like it or not, a bit closer toward Facebook. Here's a rundown of everything announced so far at Facebook in Oculus's two-day developer event, Oculus Connect. So to start things off, Facebook Horizon, a new social VR world. Yeah. In a splashy press release, and if you're a video viewer, Kevin is about to bring up a trailer. You can play the trailer quiet in the background as I read this. In a splashy press release, Facebook called Horizon, quote, "the first step into an ever-expanding world of connection and exploration where anything becomes possible," end quote. Imagine it. Legless avatars floating this way and
hold
that.
On.
Why are they legless?
Not actual VR footage.
They mention it in the trailer. Like, oh yeah, we don't have legs here. It's weird. It's very weird. The trailer is written kind of well because it's kind of funny, but at the same time, very weird and interesting.
Well,
quirky.
Because they're not tracking your legs.
Yeah.
That's a good point. They aren't tracking your legs.
Like, so expression-wise, I think you'll feel separated from the world. Absolutely. If you, like, kicked out your leg and nothing happened, right? Yeah. So they're like, meh, yeah. Get rid of legs.
That's a good point. Horizon will replace Facebook's earlier social VR efforts, Spaces, and Oculus Rooms. It's coming out sometime in the year 2020, though Facebook didn't say exactly when. Because Quest is a standalone device, it's not as powerful as the Rift, but Oculus is throwing Quest users a bone with Oculus Link. Actually, I think the way I copied and pasted this.
That's a new thing.
A different thing. But yeah, this seems to be like a VR social network.
Yeah, it's like, you know, PlayStation obviously tried with Home, and there've been some VR apps that are more about kind of linking up with friends. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people ask, well, like, why did Facebook drop, you know, so much money on a VR company with Oculus? And I think this is the time where they're starting to introduce a little bit more of the reason. I mean, they've tried before and it was awkward and weird, but, you know, their thoughts about the future of VR and AR and Facebook is that this is how you will interact with your friends in the future. It makes it a little bit more personal. Mm-hmm. It looks right now, it all looks really awkward and stilted and fakey, like all the happy people, like that guy doing the dishes in the background while, you know, while she's talking, like, move out, get out of that relationship. I think it could be really fun, right? What they're trying to do is they're trying to do a big chat room with VR where, you know, you can articulate, like, you're, you know, we'll get to the next part, but like you can move your hands and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like when you're using your custom emoji and, you know, your funny little animal faces in FaceTime and so forth, right? Like it creates like a fun element where you're wearing a mask and you're doing something silly. And then they introduce games into it, like you can play ping pong, you can do these little arcade games. But we'll see.
That sounds really fun. Like the idea of, you know, I have family kind of spread out all over. Like I have family in Houston and San Francisco, and my parents are in Nigeria, right? And so like the idea that we could all get in VR and hang out together in like a virtual space together. Yeah. That sounds like a really cool idea, and I'm all for that.
But I'm curious, like right now, the barrier to entry is still really high, right? Even with the Quest, where when you put it on, you can see the world around you, all that, it still feels like you have to go through all these steps, and we as humans like convenience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, doing a video chat with, you know, your family on five little talking squares and seeing the actual faces, I'd argue still is a little bit more convenient, is still a little bit more personal.
Yes.
But we'll see. Like, it really is all about the software. If the software is cool, there's definitely this attraction to seeing a fake version of you in this world and laughing at that and interacting. Mm-hmm. But are you going to buy your entire family Oculus headsets?
I mean, I'm not at that point yet.
And that's like, I read an interview with Zuckerberg, I think it was on CNET, where he said, this is, you know, like, we're not there yet. Like, we are, VR and AR are going to coexist in the future, and Facebook hasn't done a lot with AR yet. Mm-hmm. But, like, hopefully before 2030, we'll see VR just get more commonplace. If for them to remove that friction of putting on a headset. I love my Quest, but you know, after 10 minutes, I'm sweating and I got the red ring on my forehead and all that, right? Like, a lot of stuff has to get better before I think we all feel comfortable jumping into like a put on a fake mustache and chat with your family chat room.
Yeah. Because I'm a PlayStation fan, I have to ask this. Do you think there's a chance that PlayStation brings back PlayStation Home and makes it a VR thing? Because this seems like that.
I mean, with bringing back things, it all depends on kind of consumer sentiment. Like, what companies like Sony would do is actually do a survey out there and find out if people have positive affinity towards the home brand. Mm-hmm. If not, I think it's better for them to start with something new without like people, without kind of saying like, hey, all your expectations, you know, leave them at the door. This is not home. This is a different experience. Because I don't know that many people walked away from home saying, I need more. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, it kind of turned into the
turned
into that, you know, Norton's life in Fight Club at the beginning where little price tags were on everything and he had this fake IKEA house. Right. Like, that's what it felt like. Mm-hmm. And it didn't feel like a good experience. But, you know, maybe they can do something with that brand still.
Let's talk about Oculus Quest upgrades. The article continues. Oculus released Quest, its second try at a wireless VR headset, meaning it doesn't require dangling cords and a honking gaming PC, earlier this year. Next, Oculus says it will bring hand tracking to the device that's coming sometime in, quote, early 2020 as an experimental feature. Have you seen the hand tracking videos?
Yeah, it's. I'm really excited about it. Again, I have the Quest. I think the best experiences on the headset are, you know, things where you interact. Like, I love even just the basic kind of like onboarding room stuff where you're grabbing rockets and you send them, you know, flying into the air. Like, that stuff when you connect with this virtual world and you're forgetting that you're not actually holding an object, that's the best. But when you're using controllers, you still feel like a crab, right? Like, even though they do some tracking with the fingers already where it shows movement, you're like Dr. Zoidberg, like, you know, pinching things. And like,
Futurama.
With hand tracking, that gets removed. And like, there's something really weird and cool about like seeing your hands rendered as like cartoon gloves and like actually moving. That said, there is more of a delay. So Facebook was quick to point out that, or Oculus, that, the preferred methods of play is still with the controllers. It'll be more accurate, faster, and all of that. And hand tracking, finger tracking, it just takes more time. And so there is a little bit more of a lag when you're moving your fingers.
Yeah, I really hope that that technology continues to improve, because if we can get to a point where VR doesn't require, like, if hand tracking gets to a point where it is one for one and it just feels right, that's going to be an awesome, awesome improvement for VR. And I think that's going to go a long way into establishing it as something that that works. You know?
I mean, it'll be funny to see how like games like Surgeon Simulator adapt to it, because they're built around the concept that you are Dr. Zoidberg and kind of like messing up. But like, yeah, in a lot of games where you're even interacting with keyboards and buttons, you always go, it's this awkward like push this button thing.
Yeah.
It's going to become so much more natural when you have finger tracking without holding something in your hands. But another cool thing about VR is when you are actually holding something tangible and it gets rendered as something different in the virtual world. And so not having something in your hand is also a little bit of a limitation. So, you know, maybe they'll give us some toys with it.
I will say one of my favorite VR games from this year has been Blood and Truth, which is a PSVR game. And even though I love that game, one of the issues I did have, well, one thing I loved but at the same time was an issue for me, was that you reload your gun manually. And so like, you have to like take your hand to like to the side to like pull out ammo and then shove it into your gun. And that is very satisfying to do, but
so
like
cool,
it doesn't feel perfect. Because like, you get parts where it's like, okay, well, it's not sensing my controller well enough and things are just getting lost.
I've moved slightly from where I was sitting.
Exactly.
And it thinks that my chest is a little bit forward.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, if hand tracking, with the addition of hand tracking, and when once that improves to get to a point where it works super well, right? Like, I can't imagine like actually, you know, just grabbing ammo and actually like maneuvering my gun in very intricate ways to make that work. That sounds amazing.
No, that's my impression of VR and of motion gaming in the Wii age before that, was that menial, stupid tasks can be so much fun, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the things you don't think about in a video game when you're using a controller, Like I'm thinking of Metroid Prime 3, like just welding a door or something, welding a panel. Like that stuff was fun to do, or pulling a door open. Mm-hmm. And in VR, it is the little things like reloading your gun like this, like having that kind of that actual like tactile feel to doing something menial is really, really fun. And oftentimes for me, it's more exciting than the action.
So to continue the article, because Quest is a standalone device, it's not as powerful as the Rift. But Oculus is throwing Quest users a bone with Oculus Link, a way to sort of turn your Quest into a Rift by linking it to a gaming PC if you have one. Oculus says Link will come out in November, and initially you'll need to pick up a USB 3 cable to connect it to a PC. If you want to access games previously only available on the Rift, later this year, Oculus says it will come out with its own optical fiber cable, quote, to provide a best-in-class experience with maximum throughput to run Rift content and enough length so you can move easily in VR, end quote. The other handy upgrade coming to Quest is pass-through, quote, on demand, end quote, which uses the device's front cameras to let you see what's right in front of you in the real world without having to pull off your sweaty headset, which is very convenient. Like, I feel like if you played VR, then you understand how useful that is.
The Quest has I believe it's called the Guardian system, which is like a boundary system that you can set up. But sometimes when I'm messing around with the Quest, I go into the Guardian system setup because it gives you a kind of live feed of what's outside.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can interact without having to take
it
off.
No, it's really cool.
It's really cool.
Yeah, the Quest is an awesome headset, but this news is actually really welcome to Quest owners who have a powerful PC because the lineup of games on the Quest is very limited compared to the Rift, right? Like, it's the Quest, all the hardware is in the headset. And so it is obviously weaker than your up-to-date gaming PC. And so using a USB-C cable, I think it was, you're able to connect to a beefy computer and get to play all the games that haven't been adapted or kind of, you know, scaled down for the Quest.
Is it a different library for the Quest,
yes,
I imagine?
Yeah,
okay.
Very different. Much more limited lineup of games. But of course, the great thing about the Quest is no wire. So now you'll have to tether yourself to your computer again, and you'll need obviously a pretty long cable. And but you know, with Oculus releasing a special cable that is not just long enough for you to move around freely, but actually charges your headset, that's really important as well.
Because
that's one of the limitations of the Quest is obviously the because it's not tethered, you're gonna have to take it off and recharge it.
I think I found like the battery lasts like a shocking amount. From what I've
really,
like,
that's because you don't have kids, man.
Yeah,
no, seriously. Like,
I love the Quest.
I can't play. It's okay. I can't play VR for like 3 hours, in one sitting. But like, with my kids, like they'll play something. I'm like, come on, let me play. I bought this damn thing. Buy your own, right? And then it's like 15% battery remaining, and like it kills the vibe of that headset to have to like find an outlet and like play closer and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lastly, Oculus announced a few marquee games that are headed to the Quest, including a new Star Wars game that's coming out today, and this is yesterday, as well as a Medal of Honor game slated for 2020. On the other end of the spectrum, some games from Oculus's cheaper Go headset are coming to the Quest starting next week. Oculus also says it's going to let Quest users turn off tracking when they're seated to make casual viewing of media apps easier and more comfortable from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into our third story. It's a very simple one. Death Stranding has gone gold.
Woohoo!
Yeah. This comes from Hideo Kojima's Twitter. He tweeted, "Got the gold master approval. It's been 3 years since the studio's inception, able to mark the first step as the new Kojima Productions. Thanks to Sony, Guerrilla, cast members, musicians, artists, staff, and fans for supporting us from the start and for all the way through." So it seems like Death Stranding's not going to get delayed. It seems like it's here.
It seems like, look, I'm impressed with, how fast we got from, all that Konami kerfuffle to them actually having this game out, which suggests maybe this idea was formed in Kojima's head for a very long time, right? Like, he had time to mull this over and really kind of perfect it in his brain before they even started working on it. It just feels it feels early for that game to come out. Some people have been waiting for a long time, but like I thought it would get bumped one more time.
Like they, I think Sony announced their collaboration with Kojima at the end of 2015.
Yeah,
and they revealed Death Stranding at the following E3 in 2016.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and yeah, so it's been between then and now that they were able to. Of course, like Kojima probably had the idea, but like. That's a quick development.
It's a long time for a regular game, but like, you know, with him not being able to tap into his Metal Gear characters and then kind of like the established gameplay, and like he's obviously doing some very different things in this game. I think it's really impressive. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, with basically a startup team, like a new developer, even if there's a lot of old Kojima mainstays in there. But yeah, I'm really excited about this game, man. I went to Gamescom in August, and you know, got to see the demo, and you know, the unveil at Jeff Keighley's event of some of the new gameplay concepts, and the happy waving Jeff Keighley as well. I think it looks really cool. Like I actually don't get some of the negativity online. I think maybe it is because we've seen too much, and I think maybe people really wanted a return to like that Metal Gear stealth plus gunplay concept, and obviously there's some of that stuff in here, but like I just love this sense of a game where you're, you know, it's almost like a Christopher Nolan sci-fi movie where you're like on a foreign planet and you're like you're on a strange planet, you're trying to figure out like you're kind of trying to figure out the world and your relationship to it. I think it's really intriguing, and I have confidence that the way the game feels and the way the story goes, that it will be interesting to play. But who knows? And obviously some bonkers multiplayer elements in this game as well.
Yeah, I'm really excited for it. I've been a fan of Metal Gear forever. And so, like, you know, to see this game come out and be something that I imagine is Kojima's, like, you know, love child or whatever, right? Like, I'm really excited for it. Per, you're more knowledgeable than me about this, I imagine. If a game goes gold,
yeah.
Is there any way that it could still be delayed or
reject
like,
it? I mean, obviously, look, the idea of a game going gold goes back to the age of discs. Remember those kids? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, literally the master disc was a gold color as opposed to your regular, you know, happy rainbow silver CD color.
Yeah.
And so that's what it means. But in today's world, it doesn't actually mean all that, right? Like, if there could be a game-destroying bug at the end that might cause a delay, and that they say, well, okay, we'll ship, we won't ship the discs to retailers yet.
Yeah.
It means we consider this game done. We will obviously do launch patches, but the game will work if you don't have an internet connection. You just pop the disc in. Is what that means.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't actually mean that.
Mm. Let's get into our fourth news story. DayZ gets its second official map soon. This comes from Anna Bonafé. I really hope I pronounced that correctly.
You nailed it.
Thanks. Over on the PlayStation blog, it reads, Bohemia Interactive is proud to announce the upcoming release of the first official DLC for their hit hardcore survival game, DayZ's second official map, Livonia. Will be available to purchase soon on PS4 and is showcased in our new trailer. Based on the recently released map from the Arma 3 Contact spinoff expansion, the Livonia region brings a fresh new experience to the post-apocalyptic world of DayZ. With vast green landscapes, dense expansive forests, serene lakes, and winding rivers, the 163-kilometer Livonia map offers the perfect backdrop for any survivor lost in the wild. So there you go, DayZ fans. And then last news story, our fifth one, Bandai sues at Games over Miss Pac-Man mini arcade cabinet. This comes from GamesIndustry.biz's Hayden Taylor. It reads, Bandai Namco Entertainment America has filed a lawsuit against developer at Games for alleged copyright infringement over its use of the Miss Pac-Man character. Filed last week at the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California, the lawsuit also alleges counterfeiting, unfair competition, and false advertising. Details of the case date back to 2012 when At Games CEO Ping Kang, actually, you can probably read this name better than I can.
Well, I don't speak Chinese, but Ping Kang Xiong, I'm assuming.
Awesome. Reportedly approached Bandai with a proposition to sell plug-and-play handheld devices featuring Miss Pac-Man. Bandai, quote, expressly rejected his proposal, end quote, and in the years since, @games has sent multiple licensing proposals to Bandai, some of which have been accepted. In the filing, Bandai stresses that while it had a working relationship with @games, it never granted permission for @games to use the Ms. Pac-Man property in any way. Last year, @games was developing a product that included the original Pac-Man license. However, Bandai alleges that @games failed to uphold its end of the agreement, producing something that was, quote, materially different, end quote, from the approved version, which caused, quote, irreparable harm to Bandai's reputation and goodwill, end quote. Then in August this year, Bandai was alerted to the existence of a Ms. Pac-Man home arcade cabinet developed by @games. The cabinet features copyrighted images and characters, and Bandai alleges that the Ms. Pac-Man software was included without its permission. Furthermore, Bandai alleges that @games sold the product to retailers, making false claims that the Ms. Pac-Man arcade cabinet was legitimately licensed. The court has been asked to award an injunction against @games and put the case before a jury. So there you go.
Yeah, look, I mean, that was a long read.
It was a long read.
it's always interesting to me when relationships between companies break down like this. You can tell that obviously they had a working relationship. They had licensed stuff to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Just so people know, like companies like Bandai, Taito, like some of the old kind of arcade game license rights holders are very litigious. Like if you use Space Invaders in your art, they will come after you. If you use Pac-Man in your art, you didn't get a license, they'll come after you, and rightfully so, right? They need to assert that because they obviously want to monetize their marks and all of that, right? Mm-hmm. And so these two companies had a relationship. Something went wrong, and I think that's the interesting part of the story. Like what happened with this Pac-Man thing where this relationship broke apart, because usually they would have resolved this thing like, hey, in our contract, we didn't specify Ms. Pac-Man, so you got to pay us extra, and they come to some agreement, but this is ugly. Like things got ugly. They went public. It's a suit and all of that. And of course, Bandai is going to win this. Like unless there's something in the contract that mentions Ms. Pac-Man and the ability, the option to create this machine, this sounds like @games is a little screwed.
I'm curious to see how this all ends up playing out.
Well, that means @games will have to pay money to Bandai.
Oh yeah, but that's so
and
far.
And then maybe they'll make up and they'll make some more Bandai property games. Who knows?
But that's so far away when we figure that out.
Yep.
If I wanted to know, if I wanted to know what is coming up, this is one of Greg Miller's transitions. if I wanted to know what is coming to mom and pop shops today, where would I go?
Oh, I'm very familiar with Greg Miller's transitions. It's the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the kind of Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday. See, I wanted to go back to like saying Beyond in it.
So,
There you go.
That's also a Greg thing.
Yeah.
Out today, we have Gunvolt Chronicles Luminous Avenger IX for PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Darksiders 2 Definitive Edition for Switch. Northgard for Switch, followed by PlayStation 4 on October 3rd and Xbox One on October 4th. Fight and Rage for Switch, Reaper Tale of a Pale Swordsman for Switch, Cyber Protocol for Switch, Habroxia for Switch, Barry Bradford's Putt Panic Party for Switch.
4 hours later, for Switch.
Yeah. Paper Train for Switch. Oh yeah, today's Thursday, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Button Up for Switch, The Kingdom Crumble for PC and Mac, Wanderlust Travel Stories for PC and Mac, Baff 4 for PC, Fishery for PC, and A Story Beside for PC. And Rage 2's first expansion, Rise of Ghosts, is available now for PC, Xbox One, and PlayStation 4. New dates, Heavy Metal action platformer will be available to download as follows. October 10th on PC, that's Steam, GOG, and Humble, and Nintendo Switch. November 5th and 6th on PS4. And November 8th on Xbox One. We have a deal of the day. Thimbleweed Park is $10 currently on the US eShop.
Good game.
Yeah. I've heard really good things about it. I haven't played it, but I that's one that is on my
adventure
list to check out. Horizon Zero Dawn, a completed edition, is $12.88 on Amazon.
That's a steal. Seriously. Come on.
And then everything in Metro 2033 Redux is free on Epic Games Store. When I say everything, there's a game called Everything. Everything isn't, it's not literally Everything is Free. It's a game called Everything. And very interesting looking game. I haven't played it. I don't know if you've.
I have not, no.
Yeah, it's a very interesting looking game. Weird looking game.
That's the one where you can turn into anything, right?
Yes, like, it's the one that where you play as everything.
Yeah.
Everything in Metroid 23 or Metro 2033 Redux is free on the Epic Games Store, so check those out.
This is the Please Like Us offer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I mean, look, can't complain about that.
Now it is time. Fun. Now it is time for reader mail. You can write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kinda Funny Games Daily is brought to you by Upstart. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy. Getting out of debt is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off interest high interest credit card debt. I know Greg, when he first moved to San Francisco, he could have used Upstart because his credit was in the trash. He needed this, but he didn't have this. But you can have this because Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you, and they understand that. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check out your rate in just a few minutes. The best part, once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next day. The next day, over 300,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot. And hurry to upstart.com/KFGames to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes and won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/KFGames. Kevin, I understand the struggle, man, on screencast.
Oh, my God. It's so
dude,
real.
Dude, it's so harder than it looks.
You don't have Tim just giggling to your side.
Oh, yeah.
Thank God.
Let's get into viewer questions. 2038 Pokemon CEO writes in and says, Pear.
Ha.
KFBFs often get advice for obtaining a job for sites like IGN, but the information is skewed towards the editorial and news teams. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for people looking at other teams such as marketing, finance, or sales?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Obviously, you know, the core of IGN is a content production team, right? Editorial, video, and everything that surrounds it. So that could be some technical roles, you know, the stuff that Kevin does to make sure that everything runs. But there are also other technical roles, right? There tech ops, programming jobs, you know, maintenance, IT. There's sales, marketing. I would say finance, because we're part of a big company. Usually companies like IGN don't have, you know, a lot of like a big internal finance team, that's usually centralized. So, you know, for IGN in this case, I would be looking at our parent company, Ziff Davis, and the jobs that they have to offer. And so think that through. Like when you're looking at companies, are they likely to have their own HR or their own finance or their own marketing teams? Or are they part of a bigger portfolio company? And then you go to the portfolio company and the jobs are right there. And that's a really good way to get closer to a team like IGN because you are working on finance for IGN as part of Ziff Davis. So that's my advice. Number one, always look at the bigger picture. Two is, you know what, these jobs are posted across so many different platforms. I would say that, you know, in some of those roles, an understanding of the landscape is really important too, right? Like somebody in the finance team or the marketing team, obviously, who knows the industry and, you know, when the next console generation is going to come out, will be able to give better advice, better estimates, understand budgets better. And then on the sales side, it really is all about experience. Like it's that's the thing that sucks. And it is getting a little harder, especially in California, to land freelance experience or get internships because there's so many laws and regulations around that, that kind of some companies are a little bit more careful with offering fellowships and that sort of stuff. But look out for that. You want to get your foot in the door somewhere. The moment you have one company's name on your resume, even if it is not in the games and media space, that's, you know, that's the way to keep on stepping up and up and up until you land at a company like ours.
Awesome. Borzen00 writes in and says, good morning, blessing, and pair.
P-E-A-R. I like it.
He misspelled both
names. No, it's all good. But that's the right pronunciation.
Of course. Oculus and Facebook dropped a bomb yesterday with saying, starting in November, you can just plug a USB 3.0 cable that has a Type-C connector into the Quest and Vala.
Voila.
Okay, mm-hmm. There you go. You have a PC compatible VR headset that can play just about every VR game out now. So my question is, did Oculus just win the VR hardware game? Like, the only thing it is missing is wireless.
So the question is, the person who bought the Quest, did they buy the Quest because it is a standalone headset and they have a powerful computer at home? Because remember, in order to run this Rift stuff, you do need beefy hardware, right? Or are there people who didn't want to spend that much, didn't want to be tethered to their platform, didn't want to put up, didn't want it to be so complicated, and actually have a good gaming PC? Certainly for people who bought the Quest, fell in love with VR, and are planning to buy one of these platforms, I mean, like, why would you switch at this point, right? I think this is an awesome move. Like, as someone who's been waiting even for, you know, some of the easier to pull off games like Vacation Simulator come out on the Quest, this is really good news. Yeah. I'm going to have to steal my son's Alienware, though, for this, so I hope he's cool with that. Payback.
Borden, you said the only thing that is missing is wireless, but the Oculus Quest is wireless, right?
Wireless connection to your PC is what he's talking
about.
Being able to stream the games, that's obviously that's the best case scenario, having an ever-evolving PC hardware gaming system and the, you know, basically goggles that can receive the data as you upgrade and it gets better and better. And every 5 years you upgrade because you want better display and resolution.
How far away do you think we are from that being a thing?
It's so tough to tell. The VR market is so different because it has this really big barrier to entry where, like, some people look at it and say, I don't want to do that. I don't want to look like an idiot, right? Like, that's the thing with headsets. But, you know, it's like, if you think about it, like, if you made a movie where people go back and from back in time, come to the future, and they see people walking around like this, they'll probably say, I don't want to look like an idiot and have one of these things either, right? So I think it'll take a little while for that to become more accepted, for them to break down the barrier. AR, you know, everybody's excited about AR because you can see the real world and you're not kind of shut out from it. Mm. Quest does the kind of black and white display while you have it on, so you can see the real world, like Kevin said. I think it's gonna take a while because, like, again, like, it's the barrier to entry is a very expensive PC, even when you're streaming, right?
Which is why I'm very curious on how PlayStation furthers PSVR because PSVR has less of a barrier to entry because many people already own a PlayStation and PSVR is affordable.
So now the question is, when the next PlayStation hardware comes out, and, you know, obviously they'll continue their VR story. Mm-hmm. Suddenly it's not so affordable, right? Like, if there's a new headset at launch or a new edition of VR, maybe there won't be, then it's not this kind of like neat tiered step up where, like, halfway through the console lifecycle, you're spending additional dollars to buy this thing. Suddenly you have this giant bulk sum if you want the experience. Mm-hmm. But no, I definitely think that's really cool. That's how I got introduced to VR, honestly, in a serious fashion, is with the PlayStation. Because, I was looking for something to upgrade to with my PlayStation 4 and... dug it.
I do believe earlier in the year when the first PS5 details started to come out, I think one of the details was that the current PlayStation VR will be compatible with the next system. And so I imagine that, like, probably won't launch because they would probably wait for more people to have the PS5.
But it'll show its age, though. That's the issue, right? Resolution is low, and it's like Neo jacked into the Matrix with PSVR. There are too many cables with this thing, right? So, it'll be,
I was going to say, do you think there's any chance that we see an integrated setup with a new PlayStation? Like, so when, like, if you want to do VR, all you have to do is buy, like, the actual headset.
Yeah.
And then all the components that come in the little box are already in the console.
I mean, look at Quest, right? Like, Sony is a hardware company. Right. Like, they can definitely pull off something like the Quest and integrate PlayStation hardware, whether it's, like, between PS3 and PS4 power or whatnot. Yeah, I do think that's possible. The question is if they want to split the market. But definitely the whole tethered thing is a hurdle, and people don't like that. And I think companies are going to spend a lot of time, whether it's streaming from your PlayStation directly in the same room or some other solution, they're going to spend a lot of time making that easier.
Evan writes in and says, "Hi, Blessing and Mr. IGN, a.k.a. Pear. after listening to the show yesterday and hearing the talk about auto chess and battle chess, do you think that Humanity, the game announced at the recent State of Play, is Sony's offering into this genre? Unlike Xbox, Sony doesn't have many live service games, and I could see this as a move from them trying to get into that scene. Thanks and enjoy the rest of your week. Blessing. Thank you, Evan. I don't think that, given the studio that's working on it. So it's Enhanced Studios that works on they've done Tetris Effect and Res Infinite, which are more
one and done experiences.
Yeah, they're
not Tetris 99s. They're like, they don't evolve much, right?
Exactly. But also, like, they are more like artsy, like, hey, we're going to give you, like, you know, Res and Tetris had a big focus on music. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, battle chess and auto chess has to do with strategy, and those seem very separated as far as, like, the focuses they have versus the focus that would take. Also, like, I don't think Sony would be really invested in getting a first party. Even though I don't think Enhanced is first party at all, but getting an auto chess or battle chess game, because that is more of a PC, I believe, like, focused audience. And I assume that would also be difficult to play on console.
And yeah. I don't know. I'm intrigued by Humanity. I'm curious to see what it will be like. You know, I'm always happy when genres that I thought nobody was playing anymore are coming back and then are convincing us otherwise. Like, Pikmin was a great example where, you know, people said RTS on consoles, nobody will play them. And, like, people are playing Pikmin, which is a take on an RTS. And, like, I'm hopeful that we'll see that this game is going to be a success because the other games are really good. I don't know. We haven't seen a lot from Sony on the live service games front, but if we know one thing is that the console makers are influencing itself through their life cycle of the machines, and you know, obviously, you know, others are a little bit more active on that front, and I think Sony will.
Yeah, and the way I kind of view Sony as far as, like, you know, what type of games they try to bring to their audience, it is the games that are, you know, single player. You know, action games, narrative adventure stuff that, like, you know, may not necessarily last a long time as far as, like, gameplay time, as far as, like, they're not necessarily going for these service games. They're going for these experiences that they can put on their console in order to sell the console. You know, you're buying
right now,
at least.
I'll say right now, but remember this, like, we're at a point where gaming is going to change a lot, right? Like, the concept of buying single games, that's, everybody's familiar with that. It will be the same for as these new consoles launch, but we're moving towards a subscription setup for gaming in the future, right? Like, it's inevitable. Music and movies have shown the way, and gaming eventually will follow. There's still kind of like that sense of, no, I want that ownership. I want to be able to give my game away, but, like, it's inevitable. And so when you have subscription services, the companies running them have to work really hard to retain you. Mm-hmm. And that means some experiences that last longer and that you come back to. So I wouldn't count them out. I think there are definitely some smart people at Sony thinking about that, you know, as they obviously have a lot of services out already for streaming and, you know, long subscription plans.
The five-star man writes in and says, "Hey, Blessing and Pear, I'm curious what your thoughts on Respawn Games taking over the Medal of Honor franchise and bringing it to VR are. Do you think being in VR will be a breath of fresh air for the dormant franchise, or will this be another Medal of Honor game released to little or no fanfare? If it is successful, do you think we could see a trend of older IPs being brought back in the form of VR titles? I'm excited for Pear to be on and keep killing it this week. Blessing, the five-star man." Thank you so much, the five-star man.
So first of all, will it be another Medal of Honor game? Like, we've seen, you know, companies try to reboot classic game franchises and then putting them out as free-to-play titles or kind of like triple B games sometimes. Respawn is not that kind of studio. Like, they experiment. They put a lot of thought and a lot of time into making these games. So I have high hopes for this. Medal of Honor was one of those games, like, I loved its audio design. When, you know, when the franchise was new and fresh, I'm like, this sounds so different from every other war game. And I was, from playing the very first one, I was like intent. I'm like, I'm going to stick with this franchise. I really like that take. And then they got overtaken and they stopped innovating. And, like, every other game became like this and did the shooting mechanics and the storytelling mechanics better. It was a real shame. I don't think Medal of Honor needs to be rebooted in VR for it to be notable. Like, somebody just needs to take a stab at this franchise to do something different from Call of Duty. Do something, you know, that's either like super mature and serious, or something that is a little bit more like, you know, Inglourious Basterds or some other take on it. That said, we haven't seen, like, you know, World War II or even Modern War shooting done that well in VR. Yeah. And if there's one company I trust with trying that, it's Respawn.
It is Respawn. Yeah, that is very true, because Respawn has had, what, Apex Legends, you know, was their hit this year, right? They did Titanfall 2, which was an excellent, excellent game. And so, yeah, like, I think they would be the ones to do it. I think whether or not this Medal of Honor VR game is successful, we've already seen games like older IPs come out and be VR games, right? Like, there's the Space Channel 5 VR game that we're talking about on during the State of Play stream, right? There's LA Noire, right, which also came out as a VR game, right? We're seeing like a lot of VR experiences already from older IPs, and I think that's going to continue, because I think that's it's an easy way in order to sell a new idea, right? Especially for IP that are dormant, that are just sitting there collecting up dust, you know, repackage it, turn it into this new thing to sell this new idea. I think that makes sense.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, the companies are able to take an element from a game that may have been like a gameplay element or kind of like a micro game, and then blow it out and turn it into something different on VR. And like, I'm not sitting here excited about like StarCraft or, you know, Advanced Wars in VR. Actually, I'd be happy with any Advanced Wars. Like, you can even put it on my phone, just make one. But I like it when they take an element, like, you know, if you take the dating element out of a Fire Emblem game and you spin that out into a VR game, I think that's really cool, because then those two experiences can exist side by side. I am worried about like games that I really love and that I want to be able to play sitting on my couch or on the go. If those franchises turned into VR only, I'd be really worried. But,
yeah.
But if it's about bringing back dead games or games we haven't seen updates for, or like experiences where maybe not that many people are into the genre, I think that's a really good way to like incubate and kind of grow a new following.
Mm. Now it's time for Squad Up. This Squad Up comes from Borzen00. Borzen writes in and says, "I created the Kind of Funny Kansas City meetup group on Twitter. If you're part of the Kansas City metro area and follow, please also fill out the Google form on the Twitter page so we can go ahead and get some good ideas on how many people to expect at locations, where we should meet up, and even get ideas on how you want the Twitter channel ran. Also, if you don't have Twitter and want some sort of communication, feel free to email kindoffunnykc@gmail.com, as I will create some sort of email list there." And so if you are in Kansas City and want to meet up with fellow best friends, hit up Borzen00 on Twitter or email kindoffunnykc@gmail.com to get involved. Now it's time for Your Wrong, where you guys can write in to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong and let us know some of the stuff we've got in incorrect this episode. Let's see here. Aaron L. White writes in and says, "Was not Sea of Thieves. That was yet another new pirate multiplayer game coming soon called Atlas." I don't know what that is correcting, because I don't think we brought up Sea of Thieves this episode.
That kid's crazy.
That might have been, I guess. I don't even know if we talked about Sea of Thieves yesterday.
That doesn't make any sense.
Actually, we probably did talk about Sea of Thieves yesterday.
Maybe.
You know what? I know what he's talking about. It's because we talked about Inside Xbox, and I think I mentioned Sea of Thieves being talked about on there, so he might be talking about that.
He's off. There's something wrong with
him. Let's see here. The Nanobiologist writes in and says, "Sony is set to stream with Microsoft's Azure servers based on a deal from earlier this year." Cry Scott writes in and says, "In regards to the PS5 backwards compatibility, it has already been confirmed that it will be backwards compatible." Interesting.
Watch out, though, what that means, whether that's hardware or whether that's streaming. Mm. We don't know that.
That's a very good point. Game Jumper X writes in and says, Sony said that their next generation system will..." Okay, that's the same thing.
Yeah.
The Nanobiologist also writes in and says, "Oculus said you only need a USB-C, not a USB 3 cable to use Oculus Link." That might have been a typo in the article. Or
I can't imagine like the USB 2.0 could handle it.
No, you can do... I think you can do USB-C, but it will not charge. So you do need a Type 3 if you want to play and charge. I think that was the distinction.
Yeah.
Or maybe somebody screwed up. Who knows? We'll find out.
And then we have one more here from Blessing Senior. I'm sure my dad's not watching the show. It says, it's been around 3 years of development for Death Stranding, which would be really quick for a game being developed from the ground up. But Kojima uses the Decima engine from Guerrilla, making their own engine. And then this the Excel file kind of just trails off for some reason, so I can't read the rest.
He sounds exactly like your dad.
Does he sound like my dad?
Well, but that's good. Look, that's good context, right? Like, he started with a new company, a new brand, new IP, new story, all of that, and a new partner. But obviously, he was able to use an established and obviously good engine. But, you know, like, that's the same for every other developer. They could be using Unreal and all that. And, like, I always feel like Kojima has this ambition to make these really big games that do new stuff. And so it's still pretty surprising you got that done in 3 years. And it sounds crazy saying 3 years as if that's some sort of achievement. It's like that's a long time.
But for what the
time.
Game looks like, that's also that to me seems very quickly.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. Like, when we see the trailers and stuff, I'm like, all right, I get what this game is. And then suddenly there's like a flashback to a Vietnam sequence. And like, wait a second.
What's
like,
happening?
Okay, what's all this? And then he's running around with a gun. You're like, what? Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that's the last You're Wrong. Tomorrow's host.
Good.
For the show,
we did well.
Dude, we did it. Yeah.
We didn't screw up too much.
We did not. Like, on,
thank you.
I think
without research.
On Tuesday, You're Wrong was just flooded. And I, like, looked at it and I was like, this is overwhelming. And I just closed it. But yeah, like, we did good today, Pear. Of course, tomorrow's hosts are going to be me and my friend Alex Van Aken of OKBeast.com. It's going to be a good one. I can promise you that. And then, yeah, that's it. That's been Kind of Funny Games Daily. Pear. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciated this.
Thanks for having me.
I know it was probably like a weird email to come in, to be like, hey, like, you know, come host with this random dude that we found off the street that was selling mixtapes.
Always happy to be here, man. Yeah, it's great to meet you too. And thank you for thinking of me,
of course,
for this.
Yeah, thank you for coming here. Until next time, it's been my pleasure to serve you.
Get the thing.
You're supposed to shake hands.
Oh.
There you go.
Oh, thank you.
Sell mixtapes?
Mm-hmm.